Our quarters are to the south of here, Beoka said. Across the river and on top of the hill. Go there, Atrid, and we shall take you away. Both of you. Of course, I did no such thing. I told Ragnar, who laughed at my invention, that Breda was King Edmund's niece, and shrugged at the news that there would be an uprising in Northumbria. There are always rumours of revolts, he said, and they all end the same way. He was very certain, I said. All it means is that they've sent monks to stir up trouble. I doubt it will amount to much. Anyway, once we've settled Alfred, we can go back. Go home, eh? But settling with Alfred was not as easy as Halfdan or Ragnar had supposed. It was true that Alfred was the supplicant, and that he wanted peace because the Danish forces had been raiding deep into Wessex, but he was not ready to collapse as Burgred had yielded in Mercia. When Halfdan proposed that Alfred stay king, but that the Danes occupy the chief West Saxon fort, Alfred threatened to walk out and continue the war. You insult me, he said calmly. If you wish to take the fortresses, then come and take them. We will, Halfdan threatened. And Alfred merely shrugged as if to say the Danes were welcome to try. But Halfdan knew, as all the Danes knew, that their campaign had failed. It was true that we had scoured large swathes of Wessex. We had taken much treasure, slaughtered or captured livestock, burned mills and homes and churches. But the price had been high. Many of our best men were dead, or else so badly wounded that they would be forced to live off their lord's charity for the rest of their days. We had also failed to take a single West Saxon fortress, which meant that when winter came we would be forced to withdraw to the safety of Lundain or Mercia. Yet if the Danes were exhausted by the campaign, so were the West Saxons. They had also lost many of their best men. They had lost treasure, and Alfred was worried that the Britons, the ancient enemy who had been defeated by his ancestors, might flood out of their fastnesses in Wales and Cornwallum. Yet Alfred would not succumb to his fears. He would not meekly give in to Halfdan's demands, though he knew he must meet some of them. And so the bargaining went on for a week, and I was surprised by Alfred's stubbornness. He was not an impressive man to look at. There was something spindly about him, and his long face had a weak cast. But that was a deception. He never smiled as he faced Halfdan. He rarely took those clever brown eyes off his enemy's face. He pressed his point tediously, and he was always calm, never raising his voice, even when the Danes were screaming at him. What we want, he explained again and again, is peace. You need it, and it is my duty to give it to my country. So you will leave my country. His priests, Beoka among them, wrote down every word, filling precious sheets of parchment with endless lines of script. They must have used every drop of ink in Wessex to record that meeting, and I doubt anyone ever read the whole record. Not that the meetings went on all day. Alfred insisted they could not start until he had attended church, and he broke at midday for more prayer, and he finished before sundown so that he could return to the church. How that man prayed. But his patient bargaining was just as remorseless. And in the end, Halfdan agreed to evacuate Wessex, but only on payment of 6,000 pieces of silver, and to make sure it was paid, he insisted that his forces must remain in Redingham, where Alfred was required to deliver 3 wagons of fodder daily and 5 wagons of rye grain.